Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
We've been on the run, driving in the sun, looking out for number one. California, here we come, right back where we started from.
All right, everybody, what's up? Welcome back to another episode of the 23 Personnel Podcast. I'm your host, Spencer, joined, as always, by Michael.
Hello, everybody. I'm hoping you're enjoying reliving the early 2000s with me. Heading to the OC. Sweet 16 bound, baby. Feels pretty good.
Yeah, man. Headed to Anaheim to take on the Michigan Wolverines. We'll have to come back to this. It's too good. It's too good to waste it all now.
So I hear Michigan's pretty good.
Nah, man. They.
Are you worried? You don't look worried.
Not at all.
Oh, okay.
We're going to roll through this until final game. Championship.
Calling shots.
I mean, if you look at how Texas Tech has been playing, it's hard to... I mean, with the assumption that everything stays the same in terms of their performance, hard to feel like you don't have a puncher's chance to get to the finals.
I agree.
But you've got three teams standing in your way to do that. You've got Michigan, most likely Gonzaga, most likely Duke. So you got your work cut out for you.
That's pretty rough.
You've made it to the Sweet 16. First two rounds of the NCAA tournament went by quickly. Tournament started on Thursday. Tech played on Friday. Then the Thursday winners played again on Saturday. Friday winners played on Sunday. And after 4 days, we had the Sweet 16. Just like that, went from 68 to 16.
Yep.
First game Wednesday. Nope. Friday. Texas Tech played on Friday.
Yes, Friday at 12:30.
12:30. Took on the Northern Kentucky Norse.
I was a little bit worried about this.
Pink Raider. Let's go, man.
Let's not go that far. And the first half kind of... It seemed like I had justification to be a little bit worried. We only went into halftime with a 4-point lead. The good news is that we blew the lid off of it in the second half.
Yep.
And
cruised to a 15-point win.
Yeah, very, very convincing fashion. Didn't really seem like it was in jeopardy much long after halftime was over.
Yeah, it was 30-26 at half. And then you outscored them 42-31 in the second half. So you put on 12 more points. They only put on 5. And that was it for the Northern Kentucky Norse. Their leading scorer, Drew McDonald.
No relation, unfortunately.
No relation
to
Michael.
No one in my family is that athletic.
Came into the game averaging 19.1 points per game. Texas Tech defense held him to 2 of 13 shooting to a measly 5 points.
They were all over him. And Tech has that effect on people. You know, I think we've seen it enough to know that every time a good player faces Tech that they're not in a slump.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely the defense. They are thrown off. They're not getting the shots that they want. They're trying to force some stuff because they're not getting the shots that they want. I know there were a few threes that McDonald took that seemed like he was just trying to get the lid off the basket. And fortunately for us, he was never able to. I kind of felt bad for the guy because he was a four-year senior, been there. Mm-hmm. I think he was, Broering mentioned last week that he was recruited before the most recent coach was hired.
And then Brandon.
And then decided to stick around anyway. Mm-hmm. So it meant a lot for him to play all 4 years. He set all sorts of records there. I think he's on some of the high point lists just in college basketball in general, just for averaging almost 20 points a game for his whole career. But Sharp was the one that surprised me.
So he's the one that, like, as soon as we started talking about him, he's a blue-collar guard, a.k.a. a white guard. He reminded me a lot of Matt Mooney, and not because he's white, but because it was that supporting shooting guard role, but that was also really tenacious on defense.
He was.
Sharp stepped up when the Tech defense kind of put the shackles on McDonald. He ended up scoring 23 points in the game in 35 minutes. They had four starters play 34 or more minutes,
which is
a lot of minutes. Sharp played 35, Dantez Walton 36, Jalen Tate 36, Drew McDonald 34. Dantez Walton was your next leading scorer at 11 points. Everybody else had fewer than six. So there was not many buckets to be had by the Northern Kentucky Norse. Not all that surprising when you talk about the defensive effort from Texas Tech for this entire season. But they were held to just under 36% from the field in the first half, just over 37% in the second half. For the game, shot 37%. They were 22% from three, which is where they were not able to keep up. I think three was kind of their that mid-major, we're going to keep up with the big guys. Like, that's how they do it, is they play a defensive team that doesn't have a lot of possessions like Tech does, and is also able to shoot the three. Well, when they shot the three, they just didn't make it. They were 5 of 22 on the day. Just under 23%, and then only shot 8 free throws the entire game, which is big.
That seems awfully low.
They were 2 of 4 in the first half, 4 of 4 in the second half. Texas Tech, on the other hand, shot 17 free throws, way, way down on their percentage, connecting on just under 59%, because they were 1 of 8 in the first half. They went 0 for 8 to start.
That was terrible.
Even Moretti missed.
Yeah.
I think his season percentage dropped to 93.
It may have.
Because they mentioned that on the broadcast, that like the free throw misses are contagious, and it even affected Moretti. And they're like, he's like the number one free throw maker in the NCAA.
Yes.
And he missed 2 back.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Back to back.
Well, and then he even missed one against Buffalo as well. At least one that I know of.
That.
Unacceptable.
It's taking a beating, man. But then they finished the second half 9-for-9. They were perfect from the free throw line the second half. Texas Tech shot 50% from three in the first half, 52% from the field. Shot just under 54% from the field in the second half. So they were just super efficient. They took twice as many threes in the second half, still only connected on three. So their percentage dropped to 27%. Anyways, long story short, Jarrett Culver, your leading scorer, 29 points, 8 rebounds, 1 turnover, 1 block, 1 steal. Dude was everywhere for you. He led the team in minutes as well, played 34, nearly had a double-double.
Also had 7 assists.
Yes, 7 assists. That's very, could have been close to a triple-double.
Yeah, it was in that territory. And as far as, you know, I don't want to just dismiss Culver because, or move on to, I was about to talk about something else. So I feel like we should continue to talk about 29 points from the young man. I believe it was the most points of the day from any player. I think he impressed people the most without the first name Ja in the first 2 days. I think he single-handedly really got a lot of attention on him. If you could call it a pedestrian 29 points, I am not downgrading it. Y'all know this. But you just look up and, oh my gosh, Culver's got 19. When did that happen?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. He's got 25. I mean, it just kept going. 29. It just seemed like it was just a normal day for him. But it was a little bit above and beyond for him. They just didn't have an answer. He was making his shots outside. He was driving and spinning and getting and ones. He was really effective just all over the court. But I wanted to point out a couple of things that were a little bit worrisome, but they, spoiler alert, tightened it up in the next game. The offensive rebounds.
I was just looking at that because the stat sheet here, the way it breaks down, is offensive rebounds - defensive rebounds. You only grabbed 2 offensive rebounds the entire game.
Yeah.
As opposed to your 29 defensive rebounds.
So we'll think about that. And our guy, Norrence Odiasse, had half of those. He only played for 14 minutes. So he had half of our offensive rebounds with one.
Tariq Owens had one.
And Tariq Owens had one.
Culver had 8 defensive rebounds, so he led the team in rebounds. Also led the team in points. Very nearly led the team in assists. Matt Mooney had 8. Tariq Owens had 5 blocks.
He was fine, man.
Odiasse had 2 blocks. Culver had 1 block. Had 8 blocks for the team. 7 steals as opposed to Northern Kentucky were able to get 3 blocks off of you, 6 steals. They turned the ball over 17 times. You turned it over 11, which is a few more times than you would have liked, but you take it. On your 18 made field goals, you had, sorry, spoiler alert. On your 28 made field goals, you had 18 assists.
Oh, so good ball movement.
Pretty good movement. Pretty good. Yeah, man. You did what you were supposed to do. You took care of a 14 seed opening round. Then you got to Your prize for defeating Northern Kentucky was taking on a 6-seed Buffalo Bulls.
Yeah, a 30-plus win team.
Yep. Everybody's looking at this team like, man, the matchup just, it's not favorable. Buffalo likes to get out and run. They shoot and hit a lot of threes, which is going to keep them in a game. Again, like a team that limits possessions, if Buffalo is able to convert on threes on their possessions, it's going to force Texas Tech into a lot of things. But, man, it started off like on a 10-2 run for Texas Tech to start the game.
Oh yeah, Tech was up, I think by 11. I think they were up 19-8 at one point, and I was at home and I kind of just started checking out a little bit, which was not smart. And I knew better, but I still thought, oh wow, okay, well, I guess this is how this is going to go, and Tech's just eventually going to run away with it. But Buffalo definitely made their run later, and Tech went ice cold, and
which
they took the lead for their only time.
Yeah, it was
1-point lead.
Buffalo was able to amass a 1-point lead. That's their largest lead of the game, and it was 3.5 minutes to go in the first half. After that, once they got that 1-point lead, they went on an hour-long scoring drought, or a field goal scoring drought.
Yeah, they had a couple of free throws sprinkled in.
It was an hour real time.
Yeah.
Granted, there was a 20-minute halftime in the middle of this, but Texas Tech finished the first half on an 8-0 run and then started the second half on like a 18-3 run.
That sounds as unbelievable as I think that number actually was. That's got to be it. It's close to that.
Because I think at one point, and it may not have been the end of that run, but it was like a 26-3 run over that span from the end of the first half into the second half before Buffalo hit a few shots. You're like, okay.
Yeah.
They're coming back. But
yeah,
at that
exactly.
point, you were up. You had gotten to like a 25-point lead.
Yeah, you led by as much as 29
with
the
about
second half.
10 minutes to go in the second half, you had a 29-point lead. LeBar pointed this out. You very nearly doubled them up NCAA tournament style in the second half.
Yeah, in the round of 32.
You were, I think, 2 or 3 points away, and this is right when Buffalo started scoring again. It's right when it got, I think it was like 62-33, and you're like, we've got like 3 or 4 more points or whatever it was to like, you doubled them up, and then they
wouldn't let us have it.
They wouldn't let you have it.
I don't blame them.
And you didn't get a 30-point lead. That elusive 40-point lead never materialized, because I doubt it's going to happen against Michigan. I doubt it's going to happen against Gonzaga if you make it through. I doubt it's going to happen against Duke if you make it through.
Oh my gosh, no.
So if that happens, though, if you get a 40-point lead in one of those games, like everybody's gonna be like penciling Tech in all the way through. Jarrett Culver, again, led the team in scoring, did not have 29 points, had 16, but you had all 5 starters in double figures scoring-wise. Culver had 16. Odeyase had the game of his life. He had 14 points, 15 rebounds. Moretti had 11 points. Mooney had 11 points. Owens had 10 points. As a team, you had 3 blocks.
They were all by Mr. Culver.
They all came from Mr. Culver. The one thing that is a little concerning is Culver also had 5 turnovers.
Right.
But
as did Mooney.
Yes, he did.
And Mooney had 5 turnovers in both games.
The turnovers that Mooney and Culver had, it seemed like they were in the first half, and that's kind of what helped keep Buffalo close, or to close that gap in the first half. They were just weird times when, like, Culver was trying to hand the ball off to Moretti, and they, like, ran into each other.
Yeah, and I remember that one.
A Buffalo player just picked up the ball. There was one, like, just they took the ball from Culver. Like, he was driving, and just, like, all of a sudden, like, he doesn't have the ball anymore. What happened?
Right.
Which is as ironic, because he did that to them in the second half. Like, he just ripped it from somebody's hands. But yeah, the team, the game that everybody was maybe a little concerned about, you know, you're looking at a 3-6 game. You're like, man, this is a chance for another mid-major to kind of sneak up and make a name for themselves. You ended up just blowing them out. It was the biggest lead of, I think, any of the games of Saturday or Sunday. I don't think any game was close to what you had. I don't know their season shooting percentage, but you held Buffalo to 36.5% shooting from the field, 33.3% from three, and only 50% from the line. So a team that runs around, has really quick possessions, scores 80 points a game. You held them to 37% shooting and 58 points, 25 and half.
Well, and there was some stuff, you know, you mentioned the speed. There was some stuff before. I didn't really look that into it. I think some folks on Twitter got really riled up about one of their players talking about Texas Tech playing slower and that sort of thing. But Texas Tech does play slower. They use up a lot of shot clock. They set up a half-court offense. They make as many passes as they can. That makes sense.
As it takes.
Right. And that's what they do. So I wasn't – I think some other people just thought that maybe apparently they meant – that our guys run slower and got upset, but that doesn't make sense either. So the one thing I wanted to touch on that is we've been giving Seth Davis a lot of crap, and rightfully so, because his pregame pick in The Athletic was Tech, and not only Tech to win, but Tech to cover. And I think the spread was 3.5. It wasn't very big, but he did have Tech picked to cover.
But his video pick before the game, he was like, screw that, it's Buffalo all the way. He had their logo up, and he was like shaking that around.
Yeah.
He's like, this is going to be the big upset.
And he put upset in quotes air quotes, because Buffalo's just as good. And that's fine. But one thing I wanted to give him some credit for is in the post that he wrote for The Athletic where he did pick Tech to win, he said that it is much easier it's really hard for a fast team to make a slow team play fast, something of that effect. So it's more likely that Tech is going to force their type of game onto Buffalo than the other way around. And that's exactly what happened. Tech just methodically would take the ball down the court, find an open shot. I think Tariq Owens had two monstrous alley-oops. I know one of them was right out of a timeout. He rolled from the top of the key and Mooney hit him. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just beautiful. So I think Buffalo's had a great season. They had a good team. Yeah. I mean, I said had in past tense, but I don't think we should take too much into what they said before the game about playing slower. I think it was just more of a philosophy thing.
Or take too much from what the coach said after the game and said that, I don't remember the exact comment he made, but it was essentially that if we played them four times, it may have been a different story or something. I don't know.
Hey,
which is fine. I mean,
it's true. You see it.
Maybe you don't go on an hour long scoring drought.
Right. And you see those type of games. That's kind of the negative side of a 7-game NBA playoff series. You see that a lot. It's bizarre. One night a team will lose by 25, then the next night they'll win by 25, and it'll just go back and forth like that, and then finally you'll have a competitive game 7. It seems like they just decide, oh well, we're down by 15, whatever, we're not gonna win next. Let's just do whatever for the rest of the game, and then we'll, you know, we've got a few more to figure this out. But he might have a point, but college is so much different than pros, and the mentality of it is different.
So you beat the Buffalo Bulls 78-58. Picking up for number one, California, here we come. Going to the Sweet 16, baby.
I didn't know you were going to pipe that back in. That was a nice surprise.
Had to.
Welcome to the OC. I'm going to keep it PG here. Sorry.
Appreciate it. Texas Tech will face the 2-seed Michigan on Thursday night, 8:39 Central Time on good old CBS. Really quickly, let's look at the rest of the Sweet 16. The other teams that advanced with you. Out of the West, you have the 1-seed Gonzaga and the 4-seed Florida State. I thought this was really interesting. Half of the regions had 1, 2, 3, 4 advance. to the Sweet 16. One region had 1-2-3-5, and the other one had 1-2-3-12. So the 12 is obviously the outlier here. Oregon, the 5 and Auburn was, I mean, not the 4 seed Kansas, but not that out of the ordinary. But like, if you ignore Oregon, which you can't, they're a 12 seed in the Sweet 16. Like, this is one of the most, like, as expected almost Sweet 16s that there is, because very nearly had chalk Sweet 16. Through four, top four seeds out of every bracket make it through.
Well, and that was what was mentioned on Friday. Excuse me.
Good one.
This for the round of 32. It was the first time, I believe, that every favored team has won. I don't think there were any upsets to get into the Sweet 16. Although I'm trying to, it seems like Auburn upset Kansas. I keep hearing this on the radio, but I'm not sure how it makes sense.
I don't know if it was much of an upset. I mean, it was a 4-5 game, so if it was an upset, it was a very small one. But I think I remember hearing it right. Because of the upset that UC Irvine had to get in, because they defeated the 4 seed on that side, Kansas State.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a 12-13 seed was going to face Virginia. So there wasn't like, it was a 12 versus 13. 12 made it through. And then the 5 over 4. So you had two games with a 1 seed difference. So the upsets that were there, it was only a possible 1 seed difference. Auburn over Kansas would be the only upset, because Oregon was the 12 over the 13 UC Irvine. So,
right.
Thursday games will go as follows. Gonzaga, Florida State from the West will be at 6:09 on CBS. The 2 seed and the 3 seed from the South, Tennessee versus Purdue, 6:30 on TBS. Then these games will follow. Michigan versus Texas Tech on CBS, and then Virginia, Oregon from the South on TBS. Excuse me. Friday will be Michigan State, the 2 seed versus the 3 seed from the East. This will mirror the same time slots from Thursday, 6:00 on CBS. 1 seed North Carolina, 5 seed Auburn from the Midwest, 6:30 on TBS. Then Duke, Virginia Tech, 8:30, 2 Kentucky, 3 Houston at 9.
These are some interesting basketball games. They're going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking at the seeds alone, like, it's not the only outlier. Again, is Virginia, Oregon. The rest of these games, you're like, man, like, anybody could beat anybody.
Yeah.
Florida State's played well. Gonzaga is always going to be a little scary. Tennessee and Purdue could be a really good game. Michigan, Texas Tech, we'll talk about that in a little bit. Interesting to see if Oregon can keep their little streak rolling here against Virginia. Again, with a team like Virginia that limits possessions, as long as Oregon's being efficient on their offensive side, could keep it really interesting. Michigan State, LSU. I didn't think LSU would make it through the weekend. I either didn't know their situation, or I was overestimating the impact of what that may have been. They barely made it over their 6 seed Maryland. That was a really interesting game I watched Saturday afternoon before baseball. Before T-ball, let me put that.
Oh, way. Okay.
Not baseball. This was not a baseball game I watched. Okay.
before your Cubbies.
Before my precious Cubbies. Duke nearly lost it against UCF in Taco Fall.
That was so very close.
The officials definitely carry Duke into that, the Sweet 16. That final foul where Taco Fall fouled out and put Zion Williamson shooting free throws, that was a charge. Dude, like, lowered his shoulder and trucked Taco Fall.
Was Taco in the restricted area?
No, it was like, he was in the lane. He wasn't in the restricted area.
He's so, 'cause
he started from like the elbow area.
He's menacingly large.
I mean, he probably fell and hit his head out of bounds from where he got knocked over, but
possibly
that's also because he's nearly 8 feet tall.
Possibly the bottom of the backboard first.
Possibly. There was a replay of a dunk from that game. It was Taco Fall. Dude maybe got up to his tiptoes.
Yeah.
When he dunked it.
It was towards the end of the game because I watched that live and they passed it into him and he just immediately threw it down. And
it's like there's no movement.
I know. It was jarring because I haven't watched a lot of UCF basketball and I'm not used to seeing, what is he, 7'6"?
Seven foot, 6 inches tall.
Okay. I'm not used to seeing a lot of 7'6" guys anymore. You know, George.
And he's 350
Murasan
pounds.
Murasan is no longer around. And
he's got some bulk to him, too.
Yeah.
He's not like a little bean pole.
Yeah. He's not a minute bowl out there, but he was.
Speaking of minute
very
bowl,
impressive.
You know, his son, Bulbul.
Bulbul.
Oregon team. I think he's like 7'3" or something.
I didn't know he was that tall. Was he hurt?
Bulbul.
I think he was hurt.
He's 7'3".
But. Yeah, with Taco, that was, you just kind of forget. We had Boban Marjanovic, I can't say his last name, on the Spurs for a couple of years, and it was kind of that same way. He'd come out.
Who cares about the Spurs?
Well, he was 7'3", I think, and he was one of those guys that they would do that same thing too, and he would just, the ball would wind up in his hands, and then before you knew it, it was dunked. You don't even know how it happened. You don't know how much he jumped, if he jumped at all. It's just in his hands. There's people all around him. Did not matter. I'm going to dunk it. There's not a thing you can do about it. And that was, you know, really jarring to see that towards the end of that game. And I thought, man, they just gotta get him the ball in there. Mm-hmm. Cause I don't want to, you never want to look ahead that far, but you do just have it in the back of your mind. If Tech were somehow able to get past Michigan and presumably Gonzaga, they would face Duke more than likely. Or maybe not if UCF were to knock them out. So I had it on the split screen during that part of the game. I was
flipping back and forth.
Yeah.
Because at the time it was lining up really well. There were some timeouts during the Texas Tech game. I could flip back and watch the action on the Duke-UCF game. Vice versa. So Bulbul, his name is Bull Manute Bull, son of Manute Bull.
Makes sense.
Yeah. He's 7'3", wingspan of 7'8". So he's got
that's just incredible.
Yeah. So let's talk about Texas Tech, Michigan. Confession, I suck as a podcast host. I didn't get a Michigan expert to get on the podcast with us this week. Tears are streaming down my face as I say this.
But Dan has Staking the Plains covered.
Yeah, so we Staking the Plains and Dan will have us covered with somebody from umhoops.com.
Yep. They're kind of like the, well, I'm not sure. They're a pay site. They're a pay site for Michigan fans.
Yep. This game though, it is so much like looking into the mirror. Texas Tech BPI of a score of 17.4, Michigan BPI 18.4. Sorry, I was looking for something really quickly. The Texas Tech defense, I think, is first. Michigan's third.
Right, inefficiency.
Inefficiency. The Tech offense, I think, is a slightly lower rate. I think it's 34th. No. 59th?
I don't know. I haven't looked at the offensive numbers.
The offensive numbers are a little bit behind Michigan's. But I think that may be season numbers and not like the past 10, 12 games. Because if you're looking at that, Texas Tech offensive numbers should be a little bit higher.
Well, I wanted to go then to that.
But you also can't discount the games where you struggled. Because
right.
That's still part of who you are.
Well, I wanted to go into that a little bit. We are in the middle of a Moretti slump. If there is such a thing. Our favorite Italian, has taken 7 threes.
The Italian Italian.
He's taken 7 threes in the NCAA tournament and made 0.
Ouch.
Which is a little bit worrisome. And Mooney, who was starting to catch fire a little bit there towards the end of the Big 12 season, he's hit 2 threes.
But he's taken a bunch more, hasn't he?
He's only taken six.
Okay, so he's
he hasn't taken a lot, but he hasn't been confident enough to take them either. And for us to kind of hang around with Michigan, I really think Moretti's got to start connecting on those threes. He's had open
or
looks.
Deshaun Corprew.
Or Corprew.
Or Kyler Edwards. Kyler Edwards came in and hit a couple of threes back-to-back in that Buffalo game.
Yeah, he sure did.
Not that you were getting concerned, but Buffalo's offense was starting to score a little bit in the second half. Edwards came in and hit those two threes back-to-back that kind of carry Tech through that little mini run and extinguished any momentum that Buffalo was able to build.
Right. And Corprew's, he's only taken two threes, but he made one.
He made one. It was a really flat shot, too. I don't know if you saw it. It was in the last game. It was a thing of beauty.
Kind of a doink.
It still counts, man.
So I worry about that a little bit. Not too much. I would not be surprised at all if Moretti came out on Thursday night and, you know, went 4 for 6 or something from three-point land. It wouldn't surprise me at all. What's crazy with his threes, with the exception of maybe one or two, they all looked like they were going in to me.
Mm-hmm.
Every one of them just seemed like, oh, man, all right, that one's going in. And then you were surprised, and he was probably just as surprised as we were that they didn't. So I think this is a little, just a matter of time. Maybe the Tulsa air wasn't kind to him. He'll do better out in a kind of a drier Anaheim climate.
Is Anaheim dry, or are they close to the coast? I don't know the geography of Southern California.
Oh yeah, they are close to the coast.
They're a lot closer than Tulsa is. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, but I still think it's weird. It's not humid out there. It's just
quick weather check.
It doesn't make a lot of sense. It's not like going to Corpus or, you know, Houston or something.
It's a balmy 64 degrees there right now.
Yeah.
Weather for Thursday, high of 69.
Nice.
Low of 50. Humidity 53%, 10% chance of rain, 12 mile per hour wind.
I just know it doesn't rain out there.
Doesn't rain here either.
Mm-mm. That's what I'm saying. Kind of a more... a closer climate to Lubbock than...
It's a humid, non-rainy environment.
Yeah. With all a right. beach.
Yeah, with a beach. All right. Let's look at this game by the numbers. We already talked about the BPI. 17.4 for Tech, 18.4 for Michigan. 538 has Texas Tech as a slight favorite. Is this percentage 51-49?
Yes, that's percentages. And these are all courtesy of Kyle with his a good thing I don't talk for a living.
Tournament odds, Sweet 16.
Kyle's
post. Yep.
Yes.
Haslametrics has Tech losing very slim margins, 60.8 to 61.4, so less than a full point difference there. The point spread is, depending where you look, 1.5 or 2 points in favor of Michigan.
Yep.
Betting odds has Michigan at -135 or as low as 120. -120 for Michigan or +110 for Tech. Over under at 126. So, I mean, geez, that's like a first one of 60 wins, right?
That's a really great line.
It's a really low. It's like, oh, gosh.
Cause you think, oh yeah, well they've got to go over that. And then you think about it a little bit more.
It's like two of the top three defenses in the country in terms of efficiency.
If someone won this game 63-60, I wouldn't be that in, oh man, maybe I should take that. That's a great line. Of course.
And that would be the under.
That's their job.
Yeah. Translation, according to Michael, all caps. It's going to be close, folks.
Yes. I do believe that the days of running people out of the gym in the NCAA tournament have officially come to an end.
Okay, but come on. How much fun would it be if we put 30?
I'd be stellar.
A 30-point lead on Michigan.
I have Friday off, which is fortunate.
I think we're taking a half day so we can get on the road to Dallas.
Yeah, we're going out of town this weekend too, so I've got Friday off. I would celebrate as long as I possibly could, which means probably at least 10 minutes after the game's over, because it's going to be late. I'm going to be tired.
as much fun as I had like watching the Buffalo game, I don't think there was a lot of post game celebration besides watching like every single video that came out on Twitter from the athletic department. One, they couldn't post any game highlights. It had to come from the NCAA, which I think is a stupid rule, both for basketball tournament and for baseball postseason tournaments.
No, NCAA doesn't make stupid rules. I think we're just
you're right. Wrong. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
But all those game, all those videos,
amateur sports,
all those videos, excuse me, from the post game about the locker room dance, the little post game speech from Beard talking about playing for the man next to you. He said that they were picked, you know, to finish last in the conference. They weren't picked last. I think they were
bottom half for sure. I think they were seventh.
Because I was about to get them confused with where Baylor was picked, because they were picked at ninth. And their back-to-back Sweet 16 trips. Interesting note, Beard picked up another $50,000 bonus for winning, getting to the Sweet 16.
It's not too bad.
His season bonus total was up to $425,000. I wouldn't mind just taking that, man.
Yeah. It's a write-off.
Go ahead and keep your base salary, and I'll take the bonus. But
speaking of money really quickly, this is not related at all. Supposedly, I heard on whatever it was, Mike and Mike.
You have to excuse the autoplay video.
I know. They pop up out of nowhere. The amount of money that Rob Gronkowski's made as a player, he has yet to touch. Supposedly, he has $60 million in the bank just sitting there.
I wouldn't.
According to one of, not Mike and Mike, whatever the show is now with Greenberg on it. No, not Greenberg. Ugh. The one on the radio. The Mike that didn't get Golic? To stay on TV. Golic.
Golic and Wingo.
Golic and Wingo.
Wingo.
Sorry, I don't know.
Wingo, baby.
ESPN personalities that well.
Oh, that was so terrible.
That was awful. We got to get that drop.
Hey, producer, did you save that?
Yeah.
Yeah, man. It's coming up next. So I think without having a Michigan preview here, the one thing that we can point you to is an article from 97.1 FM, The Ticket. It's talking about Michigan's plan to slow down Jarrett Culver, which is everybody's plan. Let's be honest. That's not like anybody's going to focus on, dude, we have to stop Nerenz Odiasse. I mean, that wouldn't be a bad plan.
No, that's not a bad plan.
But if you're ignoring Culver, you're going
to
get
you're going to have to double-team. Yeah, you're going to have to double-team Odiasse anytime a shot goes up.
Dude, he was so physical.
He's going to grab it.
He was like...
Well, let's bounce back just really quickly. Okay, you know how we talked about how we only had two offensive rebounds
against
the Norse?
We did not talk about that.
Texas Tech as a team had 15 against Buffalo. And that included the seven that you mentioned from our guy, Nerenz Odiasse.
Seven offensive rebounds, eight defensive rebounds.
Yeah. And his minutes went up from, I think it was 14 to 25. So Beard obviously left him in there. I mean, he was being as effective as hell. Why wouldn't you leave him in there?
4 for 4 from the field, 6 of 7 from the free throw line.
The dude missed one shot all day, and it was a free throw.
He picked up almost as many points as he took shots for.
Yeah.
I mean,
even had an assist. The dude was all over the place.
Yep.
So
one turnover.
I was really impressed with his play, and maybe they should game plan for maybe, hopefully no Wolverine fans are listening to this, but maybe they should game plan some way to keep him away from the glass. I don't know how you do it, but
you had 30 defensive rebounds in the game against Buffalo. Compared to 13 offensive rebounds for Buffalo. So when Buffalo's shooting the ball and they missed, you had a 30-13 advantage on if you were grabbing the ball or if they were.
It was
almost a 3-1 advantage.
Yeah. And it was one of the big factors of the game was just the dominance on the glass. Mm-hmm. And that goes back to what we talked about losing to West Virginia in the Big 12 tournament. West Virginia dominated the glass. They had all sorts of second chance shots. I don't know what Tech was thinking, what they were doing. They weren't finding anybody to block out. Guys were sneaking around the back corner all the time, getting rebounds, getting easy shots. So it
Kind of glad I didn't watch that game.
Yeah, it's been a nice, you know, the Norse game was odd, just having two offensive rebounds, but the rebound discrepancy was a little bit closer. The Norse still out-rebounded you. I think it was 37-31. But then you just dominated, or 39-31, sorry. Then you dominated Buffalo on the glass, and Tech's got to be able to do that, and it's going to be difficult to do that against Michigan.
But if you do.
Yeah, if you do.
Look out.
Yeah, if you do, you are in good shape.
You're in the Elite Eight.
Oh, man. What a crazy thought.
Back-to-back years, maybe?
This was a stat that Don Williams was arguing a little bit on Twitter.
Wait, which Don Williams?
Well, the gentle giant from Floyd Data he's no longer with us. But Don Williams from the AJ he argued a little bit with the Texas Tech basketball Twitter account, who said this is the first time that Tech has made back-to-back Sweet 16s in program history. And Don said, well, actually, they made it to the round of 16 in the 60s 2 years in a row. And then,
but that was a smaller tournament, right?
Well, it wasn't just that, but the Tech account said, yes, but it wasn't called the Sweet 16 then. And then they kind of went back and forth, and I quit reading it. I just thought, okay, I get the gist. So there was...
And of course, he probably was like, no, I'm still right.
Tech made it to the round of 16 back-to-back more than once. Okay, that's fine. One of them was 60 years ago, but...
You had to play at least one fewer game.
Yeah.
To get there.
Right. But...
Of course, one fewer. You've only played two.
Yeah, but you did get there back-to-back in the same 2 years in a row.
Which means...
What's that mean?
It means... Hold on.
Oh, wait for it.
California, here we come.
Sorry, the computer was on mute the first time.
Did you ever even watch The OC?
I've never seen an episode of it.
Oh, my gosh.
But every chance I get to drop California, here we come.
Well, I'm all for it.
And here's the thing. The team's already there. Like, they flew out today.
They did. They're Avery there. Benson had his cowboy hat on.
Stetson.
His John Wayne quote on the Twitter.
Sorry, let's get back to the matchup of the game. Culver versus Charles Matthews.
Yeah, that article you mentioned from 97.1 The Ticket, the guys that are host, excuse me, Jamie and Stoney, who I don't know and I'm not going to pretend to know. They're guys that host a radio show, and they had... John Beilein call in, and they talked about Michigan versus Tech, and that was exactly what he mentioned, was that he's going to get Charles Matthews on Culver. And it sounds like Matthews, I am not obviously a follower of the Michigan Wolverines, but Matthews is kind of a lockdown defender and could be a guy that could really affect what Culver likes to do. So hopefully we can get him in foul trouble as quick as possible. Maybe he won't be on the court as much.
Yeah, so and they also reference the first in defensive efficiency, where Michigan's third. They rank third in the country, to Texas Tech does, and points against per game, behind only Michigan and Virginia. Thursday's game may well be a race or a struggle to 60. Called it. I didn't read the article before I said that too. So
no,
first to 60 wins.
I agree.
Yeah. So the thing about it, this Charles Matthews is going to be the guy that draws the short straw of trying to defend Culver.
I think which he's the a guys, sophomore.
The guys here, Jamie and Stoney said, let's be real, like to slow Culver down. There's really no stopping him. Beilein, you said his name is?
Beilein.
That makes more sense. We'll deploy his best defender, Charles Matthews.
Yep.
Charles Matthews is an elite defender. This is from the coach. Is an elite defender, and he takes it personally. But he's really a good player, and Charles has faced really good players. Sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't, but it should be a great battle between two great players. Which, okay, so I prefer to hear that coach speak, like, okay, we're going to put our best defender on their best player, and we're going to see like how it turns out. Not this, Texas Tech got lucky. We would have beat them. We played them three more times. Buffalo Bulls all the way, baby. Screw that guy.
No, I like what he had to say. And as a guy who's a fan of Kawhi Leonard, even though he's no longer on my beloved Spurs, I'm interested to see this matchup myself now.
California, here we come.
That's where we're going to see it.
California.
Here we go.
Gosh, I'm just waiting for like a cease and desist letter one day from all these licensed media clips. But here's the thing: we're not a for-profit organization here. We're not non-profit, but we're not making any money on this racket.
I think Phantom Planet would let us slide. Maybe Josh Schwartz would let us slide.
We're promoting the OC, guys.
Yeah, yeah.
It just also really helps that Texas Tech fans. Texas Tech basketball is heading to California.
I know. I've got one of the guys in my office. He went to Tulsa for both games, he and his family. And then during the beatdown, his wife booked tickets for them to fly to Anaheim.
What a wonderful wife.
It's a beautiful thing. So they're going to go to Anaheim. I mean, they're a huge sports nuts. They went to Madison to see them play Duke.
So they were probably singing...
California, here we come.
They will be. It hasn't gotten old to me yet.
I don't know. Probably everybody's like, stop.
It's fine.
Or they see it coming and they hit like just in their minds. It's STAAAHP. Stop.
No, it takes them back to
good days.
Yeah, it takes them back to the days of Christmas Hanukkah and. All the other things, all the other crazy things that would happen on the OC. And Oliver was the worst. What a guy. Held people hostage and stuff. Terrible, terrible.
Yeah, so as we mentioned a little bit earlier, Dan has an interview with Dylan Burkhart of umhoops.com. That should be going up on Stake in the Plains next day or so. I think it's tomorrow or maybe Thursday morning. We have previewed the questions he's going to ask. There's a really good one in there that I'm going to share with you guys now. Sorry. Spoiler alert. No, I should be apologizing to Dan, but it was a question that he said he always likes to throw in like questions where the opposing fans end up hating him. It's actually a question from Keith. Sorry. Where will the team go for comfort food after getting bounced from the tourney by Tech?
Do you think he'll actually do that?
I certainly hope he does. Because here's the thing. It's going to be a whole different realm of restaurants out there. And
California.
You snuck that one in. Usually I've been able to see it coming. That's not too bad.
Oh man, we're so unprofessional. Michael, get your crap together, man.
Sorry. This was my idea to play this song.
Yeah, you wrecked it. This was all your fault.
My gosh. Okay, so what else we got to talk about?
Nothing? We're going to talk about football, we're going to talk about baseball, and we're going to talk about my yard.
Okay. Let's do it.
Football. Footy football. First of three spring practices coming up this weekend, March 30th, 2 p.m., Lubbock, Texas, Jones AT&T Stadium. This will be a open-to-the-public event. It will be a team scrimmage. Like I know my official friend, my friend that's an official for the American Athletic Conference.
I thought you meant you had an official designated friend. That was really sweet.
Yeah, he's so good to let me tag him, give him the official tag.
And I'm just an unofficial friend, but you've got an official friend.
I have an official
around.
Friend. The official that officiates in the American Athletic Conference, does a lot of Houston games, was there for the Houston game, actually, against Tech this year. He'll be at this game. He's also one of our biggest vendors from our professional work at the hospital.
Tell them to go easy on us. Don't call no pass interference or nothing.
So yeah, that'll be this weekend, Saturday, 2 p.m. I think it's set up in a way that you can attend other home events. I don't know. Sorry, the baseball team's on the road. I know that. I don't know if I believe softball's at home. I believe there are other things happening on campus that you can attend after the scrimmage. There will be autograph session that they've done for a while. They invite everybody down to the field. So get ready for that. First of three scrimmages is the only one in Lubbock. The next one will be the next Friday, April 5th in Midland, Friday Night Lights. At Grande Communication Stadium, where we've had the previous Midland scrimmages before.
Right.
And then the official spring game is April the 13th in Frisco.
At the Star, right?
At the Star in Frisco.
Well, how about that?
So you'll get three scrimmages in the span of 2 weeks. Sorry, 3 weeks. Very nearly three consecutive Saturdays. Saturday, Friday, Saturday. And that'll put a wrap on the spring practice season. Did we talk about the four players that were suspended last week?
We did. We mentioned it. I haven't seen any news updated on that. Did you?
No, I heard Chuck Hines asked for an update about that. He got a very curt no.
Okay. All right.
Jamie Lint, however, said he expects those guys to be back because if they were going to be gone, they'd be gone, right? I can't disagree with them, but I don't know what's going on. Other than they are not currently practicing with the team, but they are not, they haven't been removed from the team.
I hope it's not, I hope Coach Wells hasn't set some bar a little bit too high. For
can there be a bar too high?
There could.
Because he's all about not lowering expectations. They're trying to build a Big 12 championship program, Michael.
So I've heard. I have heard this.
And they're not going to lower their expectations to make sure they keep players.
This is true. This is a thing that has been
said.
Which
you would know had you watched episode one of Saddle Up, which I think is a fantastic name.
Yeah.
I love the quote from Musburger. I love that it's also...
I just love Musburger. Just mm-hmm. bring Musburger into anything. I'm good.
Yeah. I also love that it's... it's on like the wall in big vinyl letters in the big meeting room.
Oh, I missed that. I don't know how I missed that.
It's it's in the background, one of those coaches interviews that they do in the meeting room. I think it's of Wells, and you're looking up at him, and then behind him over the shoulder is the full quote from Musburger, which if you give me a second, I can pull it up on the good old Texas Tech TV. But
well, what's interesting too is that they don't, it's one of those sayings that it just kind of works with Wells, but if Tommy Tuberville had tried Saddle Up, everybody would have just taken a huge dump on it. What's this guy trying to pull? Come on. I don't get it. Oh, it's the shootout at the corral. Saddle up. Whatever, buddy.
That really weird, like hype video, that pregame hype video they did.
And they were all dressed up and cowboy get up and everything.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm kind of thinking of. That probably would have been his version of Saddle Up and everybody would have come unglued, but it kind of works with this. And the music, the intro music for the,
it's very like Western, like almost like Yellowstone / documentary music.
Yeah.
I actually tried to Shazam it today. No results. So
I know. I wonder if it's an original thing or where that came from, but it's good. Did you find it?
I've got it queued up. I don't know where the quote is, though.
Oh, it's right when they're zooming into the Jones.
The vision for me is to put a program when they're over the Jones. All the West Texas and Lubbock can be proud of.
Sorry, Coach These Wells, we're going to have to skip here. Introductory press conference.
Up his mouth is how fast we're going.
Here's the music Mike was just mentioning. If you're not a Texas Tech TV subscriber, you should definitely be.
This is free.
At least for the baseball season. wonder if I plug them enough to let me just play this music for them.
When you come to West Texas, folks, saddle up. You're going to go on a wild ride.
There it is.
Kind of has a Red Dead Redemption type music.
I've never played it.
Well, I've never seen Yellowstone. So
you
there's
should.
two references neither of us get.
So episode 2 came out yesterday. I think there was a heavy emphasis on inside receivers coach Luke Wells and the tight ends. A lot of interview time with coach Luke Wells.
And I believe Bowman.
And Bowman was talking about basically every tight end on the team. He's really excited about the incoming freshman. Simon Gonzalez says he's probably the most athletic of the group. You've got your H-back, fullback guys that were converted over, Killian and Carr. The biggest thing is they're trying to see if they can run routes and catch, but that they're like freight trains. They're gonna knock you over. Talks about Kuntz coming in, having that little bit of polish coming from JUCO, and then DT, Dante Thompson, making a little bit of a transition from the position he was playing last season to the full-time tight end. He was more of a receiver than an inline blocker, but that was kind of the focus. I wasn't able to watch the entire thing at work.
Neither was I. It's been a crazy week.
Had work to do. But it's 15 minutes of your time available on Texas Tech TV. You said it's free day after?
Yes. So. Like today, I was able to just watch it, just Texas Tech TV.
TexasTech.tv.
Mm-hmm.
On demand.
On your Roku and on your...
Is Apple TV?
Apple TV. I'm not sure. I'm not sure how that works. I wonder if you are not a Texas Tech subscriber, if you could still watch it on those devices. I'm unsure. But I know on a web browser you can watch it, or on your phone.
I'm a big fan that they were able to add those, add the Texas Tech TV app into Roku.
That's great.
Because we have a Roku TV. I was able to add that on instead of having to try to screen mirror or use Chromecast on the other TV in our house.
Never quite works right, and it takes up a device for...
And
it's 3 hours.
It's on like a weird delay, and the longer you're in, like your commercial breaks, you get further and further behind. So if you like push like the live button every time it goes to commercial and see if you can skip a minute
then
or whatever,
miss something.
Yeah. So yeah, that it's been a really entertaining docu series. That's gonna be loud. Sorry, Mom.
I was wondering if it was.
He was about to throw an empty Gatorade bottle into a plastic trash can across the room. Was like, that's gonna be loud.
That's close.
So yeah, I'm looking forward to the being able to catch one of these scrimmages. I don't know if any of them are gonna be on TV. Maybe the spring game in Frisco.
I was looking that up. I haven't found anything for sure
because
I'll be on the website.
I'll be out of town this weekend.
Going to
a cousin's wedding in Dallas. Have a T-ball game on Friday night. Not that I would have really driven down to Midland to watch that. Now that I live in Lubbock, and then the weekend in Frisco, we have more T-ball here that I'll need to be at, where my actual manager of the team will be out. So I'll be interim manager, head coach of a four-year-old T-ball team. It's
full duty.
It's something, man. It's yelling at four-year-olds, which I quickly found out was a really futile effort.
Frowned upon?
No.
Oh, just not worth just it? They don't
nothing,
respond?
I accomplished nothing but getting, like, screaming. The parents are like, man, who's that psycho out there screaming at my kid? And then, like, nothing actually changes on the field. So I was like, you know what? That's just making me more upset. I'm going to stop yelling.
Yeah, let's enough of the yelling.
We also have a new practice plan that, like, we're allowed defensive coaches in the field for the first half of the season. So we have four coaches. We all have like our little section of the team, and like that's the field that we're responsible for. So I have three players in my section. My son's one of them, and he's at baseball. He tries to be a good listener, but like as a four-year-old still has the attention span of a goldfish. So
it seems,
but he's trying. I made a really serious request, plea. I was like, Grayson, bud, I need you to be the example.
Oh, man. I got told like, that as a kid.
He's like, yes, sir.
I was the example kid.
Yeah.
And look how I turned out. I'm great.
He tries, which I'm grateful for.
Yeah.
We got kids on the team that like do not care.
No, that's good. That's all you can hope for at this age, like, is a little bit of effort. You know,
and he's standing there in his position, like in his ready position, like, Dad, when is it gonna be my turn to go bat? I was like, watch the ball. He's like, okay. All right. Speaking of baseball, Texas Tech Red Raiders just finished up a 5-game weekend series, kind of. You had two series. You had a 3-game series against Michigan Wolverines. It's too bad that couldn't line up a little bit better, play the basketball and baseball at the same time. Although that would have been a little more distracting, trying to figure out where to put your attention. You swept Michigan. You outscored them 29-10 over the weekend, 11-2, 10-3, 8-5. Then Stetson and Michigan played on Saturday. I think Michigan won like 16-5.
Oh, I didn't even see that score. I didn't think about adding that to,
yep. And then,
to our notes.
Well, it's just more like just FYI. And then Texas Tech played Stetson Sunday, Monday. You lost the Sunday game 5-7 in 10 innings. So it went to extras. It required some late game heroics. You tied the game bottom of the ninth. The Doug Facendo pinch hit 2-run double.
Yeah, because they were down 5-3, right?
5-3, yep. You tied it 5-5, and then Stetson was able to put two more runs up in the 10th, and you couldn't answer. So you lose that game, come back and win yesterday's game 5-4. I turned this game on, Texas Tech TV. I got back to my desk after lunch. It wasn't working for me over lunch. Got back. It was all of a sudden working. Texas Tech was up 5-0. And then very quickly, after I started watching, it's 5-4. I was like, what is happening?
You did it.
It was me.
It was definitely you.
It was my jinx. So I apologize for the closeness of that game. Texas Tech was still able to pull it off. I got this sweet new baseball scoring book that I was able to try out for one of the games this weekend. It was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. The Bob Carpenter scorebook.
I wonder what Keith uses. I know he
uses a version of the Bob Carpenter scorebook.
Yeah.
This guy, he's the radio announcer for the Nationals. He's developed this after like 30 years of calling games. He's got a TV version, a radio version, and a fan version. So the TV and radio version are for the professionals calling the games. It like has more space and more area for details and stuff to keep them.
Oh, I'm able an idiot.
To pull all the stats.
I thought it was for the person watching on TV or the person listening to on the radio.
It's for the guy calling the game on TV.
That makes so much more sense.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm with you now.
I got the version for fans just because I'm not at a point where I'm going to be calling a baseball game. That may be cool. I have a hard time like keeping up with like the scorebook on my own, let alone like trying to like call out a game and like also be taking notes on the side.
I can't imagine doing both.
It's been something like I picked up a few years ago, scoring a baseball game that I've enjoyed doing. Anyways, Bob Carpenter scorebook, shout out.
And it's a good way to keep engaged. I talk like I've done it. I haven't ever done it, but as an outsider fan of baseball, it would be a good way to keep yourself engaged, because there's a lot of times you may just wander off and go do something for a little bit just because you quote unquote think something isn't exciting at the moment, but baseball can turn into something really exciting really quickly. So you know for the kind of lulls in between the really exciting bits, you kind of need a little bit to carry you through if you're not a diehard fan sometimes.
The other thing is...
I mean that in the best way possible, everybody.
Yeah, believe me. He's not trying to put all of us baseball fans down or
no,
the game
definitely.
Of baseball.
Well, and I'm the older I get, the more I like it. It hasn't been something I've searched for years, you know, on the TV.
It's also a way to keep track, like, because, you know, baseball guys, they track, they write everything down. Everything. It's a way that you can like go back in the moment and say, oh, you know, I remember Gabe Holt, this is like his third at bat today. I don't remember exactly how he did. You look, he's got your scorebook right in front of you. He's like, oh, he walked in the first inning and struck out in the fourth, or reached on a fielder's choice and advanced on a pass ball and stole third and scored on a sacrifice fly. Like, you can pull that up really quickly. And it's like, I remember he got on base.
Yeah. Well, if you try to pull up that kind of stuff, even with the stat sheets that you have available online, it's play-by-play or it's mm-hmm. if someone asked you that question, you know, well, how did he do it his third at bat? You'd have to sift through a lot of, okay, all right, play-by-play.
It's not broken up by player.
Let's start in the second inning and see, okay, was that his third at bat, though, actually? I'm not quite sure. And it's so much easier to be able to look at that book and find exactly what you need.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. Also helps keep track of, like, trends game to game. You can, like, going into the game, you can say, okay, Gabe Holt's 32-game on-base streak is still alive. You can track it through the game. I don't know if that's actually true or not. I think he made it on one of those games, the one game that was, like, concerned was going to get broken. I know his 11-game hit streak came to an end. I don't know if his on-base streak. But one of the things that if you're keeping a better book than I am, or if you keep, you know, if you watch all the games. That's the other thing is, like, if you don't keep a book for all the games, and it's like, well, kind of what's the point?
Yeah, but it's still, it's fun.
It's still fun.
Something you can pick up here and there.
I'm enjoying doing that. It's also kind of cool to look at it. It's like you're writing in, like, symbol, like, not symbols, but you've got, like, shorthand for everything. Like, where, like, if it was a single, double, triple, home run, if he was hit, if he walked, there's a sacrifice, how he was put out. If there's a double play, you've got three numbers there. What does that mean? It's kind of cool to look back on. It's like, man, this looks like gibberish, but I know what it means. Secret language.
It's like, a code.
I understand. It's a code of the baseballers.
Yeah. You would have to teach me this code.
I will teach you to baseball.
Okay.
Big 12 play resumes this weekend. Texas Tech heads up to Manhattan, Kansas, take on the Kansas State Wildcats Friday through Sunday. Games will be broadcast on ESPN3.
Yeah.
On the app.
It said ESPN3 according to Texas Tech's website on all three games. So
it's
hopefully we
all
can.
The basketball's off of ESPN at this point.
Yeah. They don't got a lot of stuff they could show.
There's not a lot of content left.
So hopefully we can all tune in that way.
Mm-hmm. And then there will be two games midweek next week against New Mexico in the Kirky. Sorry, this was shorthand by Michael.
That's Tuesday, how Adam Wednesday. And I say the Albuquerque. It's the Kirky.
You don't want to say like ABQ or Duke City?
Nah, it's the Kirky.
The Kirky. On the Mountain West Network. So is this a TV network we have access to?
I don't think so.
Probably not.
I just thought I'd throw it out there.
Okay, well then everybody...
Look for the radio broadcast, everyone.
The radio broadcast 97.3.
Unless you live in the Kirky area and subscribe to the Mountain West Network, I think you better look out for Jeff Haxton somewhere. I guess he'd be on the call either way.
It depends on if there's a basketball game anytime soon. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure how the days work out.
Elite Eight schedule would look like. That's
what
we're talking
about. Yeah, the logistics of getting to Albuquerque's on the way back.
Sure. He has to fly separately from the rest of the basketball team.
Yeah, it's on the way back. No big deal.
They just like drop him off.
Yeah. Just shove him out with a parachute. We're somewhere over New Mexico. You'll be fine. Look for I-40.
There's a big mountain there. You should be fine.
Yeah.
All right, man. You want to get some questions? We got three from Brian.
I'm ready.
So ready. Except I'm not. Hold on. Okay. Brian asks us, one, top three apple varieties. So I don't know if I can go three. I'll give you my top two, and the rest of them is like, I don't really care. Because they're either too mealy or too mushy or just junk. Number one is Fuji. They're crisp. They're sweet. It's not Honeycrisp. Those are junk too.
How dare you?
Fuji's good. And then Green Apple. Granny Smith. Yep.
You've got those. That's
all
you need. That's all you need.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'm going to order them, but Honeycrisp is up there, my friend.
No, it's not.
Honeycrisp is there.
It's trash. It's like the Gala apples are.
How dare you? It is not.
Those are mushy and like not sweet. They're not even tart.
Don't you compare Honeycrisp to Gala apples. Jazz apples. I like me some jazz apples.
I'd have to try. I don't remember if I know jazz.
You need to try jazz. I used to like Pink Ladies, but I think they've gotten a little bit too crunchy, if that makes any sense. The last ones I've had. And then there was one apple, and I wish I had asked my wife about it. There was one that some random guy, of course, once...
Some random guy from Idaloo?
No, some random guy from
the orchard
at
right there.
United was telling my wife the kind of apples to get. And you realize quickly when you're married how often random guys just speak to your wife in public when you're not there.
Hey now.
Yeah, it kind of, you know.
Watch it, brother.
And it's just something that women have to deal with a lot in general, but it just kind of rubs you the wrong way. But whether he was a creeper or not, he recommended a heck of an apple, but I can't remember the name of it. It was really good, and it was kind of a limited thing. It was one of those hybrid ones that has only been around for a few years, but it was delicious.
So was that apple variety breeding article, was that shared on Slack from our Staking the Plains guys?
It was.
Okay. That was something I hadn't really thought about, was the proliferation of...
We like apples.
The apple tree.
Yeah. And Seth is a big apple fan.
And not the tree as in like the plant, the actual plant, but the everybody had like a Red Delicious, and that was like the only apple available. And you're right, they're trash. It's just the worst of everything possible about an apple. But then all the genetic engineering and crossbreeding that goes into creating these new breeds of apples that are crisp and super sweet, or crisp and tart, or soft and sweet, any combination of those, or anywhere in between. If Michael can find that really quickly, we can share that with you.
No, I can't find it. I'm still going to look for it. So just kind of while we're in between everything.
Or little video. I can't remember, but it was fantastic. Eye-opening. If Michael finds it, we'll share it in the show notes. Brian's second question, least trustworthy fruit. So I'm not sure how to take this.
Okay, I think I know what you mean there, Brian. Every time you buy it, you take a chance. Every time you buy it, it's not like it's consistent. And it's not like you can even judge whether or not it's going to be consistent. You may think you've found the perfect cantaloupe, and then you get home and it's just crap. And cantaloupe's not a great example, because even if it's not very good, you can go ahead and cut it up and just leave it in the fridge for a little while, and then it'll kind of get softer, and it'll ripen a little bit, you know, it'll have a little bit of give, but something like that. That's the way I look at it. To where, I think one of mine, and how did he word it? Least trustworthy?
Least trustworthy fruit.
I think bananas up there for me, even though I buy bananas every week, and I probably throw out like two bananas a year. I eat them and I buy them and... It's not a big deal.
And you eat them.
Yeah. It's not like I'm just stockpiling bananas. The issue is you kind of have trouble deciding, well, should I get five? Should I get six? Should I get seven? I don't know. And then you realize later, oh my gosh,
I've got four left.
Yeah. And this one's bruised.
Because it's been sitting there for so long.
This one's bruised like those bruises you'd get when someone would kick your shins. Every now and then you get one of those bananas that's just bruised. 6 inches down the whole thing, and you're like, well, this is just garbage. I've got to throw this away. So,
or make banana bread.
Right. Yeah, I guess you could. But that one's okay. That one's really not that untrustworthy. I can't think of another one. I've had some bad experience with those little halos, those little mandarins. Mm-hmm. Every now and then you get a batch that's just dry.
Yeah, there's like no juice in it.
No juice. Makes no sense. You're just chewing on pulp. And then after about four or five of them, you're like, that is, nope. These are all terrible. Every one of these are terrible. And it happens about every fifth or sixth bag. And you just decide, nope, these are all going in the garbage. I think berries are very untrustworthy because they all look delicious. All berries look fantastic.
They have such a short season too. And like you can grow them out of season, but it's like the taste of in-season berries.
Yeah.
So I would probably have to agree with you, least trustworthy. It's going to have to be an out-of-season berry.
Yes.
Where, like, you're taking a shot. Like, this could be really sweet, or it could be really tart, or it could be bland. It could just be skin.
Yeah, and particularly, I think strawberries are up there just because
they mold
taste like
so
water.
Quickly.
Yeah, if you get a bad strawberry, it's just kind of like you're eating dirt leaf water.
But and the way they're packaged in those little plastic containers.
You can't tell.
Yeah, well, you can't tell how they taste, but like it also.
Well, yeah, sorry.
While it has holes for it to drain and air out, whatever, will still grow mold in like a day.
Right. That's what I mean. Is you can't. You can buy it. You can get home and open it, and then like, four of them will have mold, and you didn't know that until you got home because the way they packaged them and it was all moldy in the middle. Yep. Okay. I think we settled on berries. That's probably the least trustworthy.
That or peach.
Yeah, peaches are hit or miss. Because you think peaches are definitely hit or miss. I don't want a crunchy peach.
No, those are the worst. Like they're like underripe.
Yeah.
Like they were too soon and they're a little drier.
Yeah.
They're not sweet.
A dry, crunchy peach is the worst. No, pass.
Which you would think you'd be able to feel, but it's been a while since I've purchased a peach.
No, and they smell. They always smell delicious.
They smell so good.
Every time they smell delicious. I got to get me some peaches because it just smells. You walk in and you
smell it from the door. You're like, oh, probably got, I'm getting some today.
Well, they probably got, you know, Bath and Body stuff floating around and Scentsy and everything. But you walk in, you're, oh, well, peaches, they're going to be good today. And I'll put them in a little brown bag and make sure that they're nice and ripe. Nope. Yeah.
We had a peach tree in our backyard at Hobbs. We literally did nothing to it except make sure we watered it every now and then, like when we thought about it. It's our first experience having a fruit tree. Didn't know all the little tricks of keeping birds out of the tree. Like they're like tree nets or
the
like
shiny stuff,
the discs, the CDs in there.
Yeah.
Not that we could have eaten like half of the fruit that we were able to still salvage all that tree. A peach tree from Hobbs, surprisingly good peaches.
We had, you know, back in Merkle, Texas, we had peach trees and apricot trees. And every now and then, those apricot trees would just make like crazy. And we'd give as much away to people as we could. And, my mom and my grandmother's both sides, they'd make preserves. And we'd have cobblers and we'd freeze them and we'd make ice cream, like mm-hmm. peach ice cream or topping for vanilla ice cream. Or anyway, it was surprising how much those trees made because they looked terrible and they were old. They'd been around a long time and just kind of, I mean, Dad did a great job watering them. So, I mean, I'm sure that had a lot to do with it, but those trees lasted forever and they just made it just about every year. Peaches were a great thing growing up. That's probably why I have such a trouble with grocery store peaches.
Well, so here's my experience with that. We found this farm between our house, my parents' house in Mesquite, Texas, and my grandparents' house in Natchez, Mississippi. There's a peach orchard in Ruston, Louisiana. Ruston is home of the Louisiana Tech Bulldogs. But there's a little peach orchard, and I'm blanking on the names. We would just call them. We were going to stop for Ruston peaches. Like you would literally drive up to this person's barn and just buy 25-pound boxes of peaches. And we found out it's that like late June, early July, like 4th of July is like the best time to buy peaches straight from the farm.
Mitchum Farms?
Yes, that's them. Good, good peaches. They also sold like preserves, like peach preserve. Like they basically just like sliced the peaches and then put them in a jar
with a bunch of sugar.
Yeah. Oh, it was so good.
Yeah. Beautiful. Beautiful.
They also had like blueberries and stuff. Not their game. It's peaches. So if you're going through Ruston, Louisiana this summer, stop by Mitchum Farms and get a 25-pound box of peaches because you will go that sounds like a lot of peaches. You will go through and be like, I need more.
I've got to go back.
On my way back through Ruston, I'm going to get another box.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, third question from Brian. Best Easter / spring seasonal candy. What you got?
Starburst jelly beans.
You and my wife. My goodness.
They're the best thing.
She loves both of those candies like by themselves.
Me too. Me too.
So the combination is just... Sorry, I'm trying to move and readjust, and I'm kicking everything.
I've somehow resisted the urge to buy them this year, and I don't know how. And
have you seen them yet?
I have seen them.
Okay.
And no one has brought them to the office, which is great. But just know that when they do, I'm just going to live off of jelly beans until they're gone. They're yeah. fantastic. They're by far my favorite.
It's a food group to itself with Samantha is jelly beans.
Yeah. It's one of the things I can't keep around the house.
For me, gosh, tried and true Cadbury eggs, the Reese's peanut butter bunnies.
Yeah. Reese's peanut butter, any shape.
Or the eggs. The Reese's peanut butter eggs.
Yeah. I'm good with those. Jack-o'-lantern. That's still good at Easter.
The white chocolate ones were pretty good. Oh, those are yeah. pretty good.
Yeah. I can see why people don't like them, but I've always liked white chocolate.
I'm not a fan of like that, those brick bunnies. Like chocolate brick. There's,
or the hollow
point?
Ones.
What's the point?
No, with the weird eyes that don't taste any good anyway.
Yeah, it's just strange. Brian says, better believe I'm running through cartons of double bubble Robin's eggs.
That's some good stuff.
The Robin's eggs, yeah, I can get. So the one thing I think everybody puts out.
The speckled ones are the best. Even though I think they all taste the same. Speckled ones are still the best.
The one thing I think is like height of Easter spring seasonal candy are those stupid Peeps.
Yeah.
Those marshmallow rabbits.
Well, then all those recipes come out on Pinterest and on YouTube and everybody, here's how you use Peeps to make, and they're melting them and
what's
doing Rice Krispie treats or something with them.
Why not just use regular marshmallows at that point?
Yeah.
So they did have like a cotton candy flavored one or like a blue raspberry that was...
It's a texture thing for me.
As good as you're going to get with a Peep, but yeah. So when I was... serving for my missionary service with my church when I was younger, we were in the training center over Easter, and one of the guys in our group, his mom sent him like a crate of Peeps, and nobody wanted to eat them, so like we basically like created like risk style armies with them, and we battled them in the hallway.
Oh, well, there you go.
Like we had hundreds and hundreds of Peeps. Cause then another guy that was like, that lived close to the area is like, hey mom, that was a great idea. Send me some. So we had literal crates of Peeps that we were just jacking around with.
I think that's a good use for them.
That's about all they were good for. Thanks Brian for helping us talk about food, our obligatory food segment on the 23 Personnel podcast.
That's right. We made it.
We did. It had to come all the way to the questions section. We did skip the intro because we were just too focused California, here we come. On getting ready for the Sweet 16. I have a quick going yard update. I mowed my yard for the second time this season. I was actually a few days behind. I mowed it yesterday. It could have been mowed on Saturday, but we were running around. We had that storm come through Friday night, so the grass was too wet. Then we had baseball pictures and a baseball game. So I got out there yesterday, mowed it. Oh, the yard looks so good.
It needed it. That's what's strange. That's what's strange is as much as I, you know, give you grief for mowing in March and looking forward to it, your yard did actually need it.
Check that out.
He's showing me a picture right now, and it does look pretty spectacular. I see you went with the parallel to the driveway lines.
I did.
This week.
It's just easier to keep them straight.
Yeah.
Which I'm not really good at keeping straight lines. But if you do stripe your lawn with, you have to have longer grass to do it. If you do stripe it, it has to be with the sun. So like,
okay.
You're only going to see the stripes if the sun is behind you.
Right.
Or like, yeah, so the sun has to be behind you. So you have to follow the track of the sun. So you basically have to do east and west stripes.
Yeah, and your house faces west.
So it helps because like I'm either looking at the stripes in the morning or I'm looking at the stripes coming home, or my neighbors are looking at the stripes coming home in the afternoon. I will break out the checkerboard pattern later on this year when the grass gets a little bit longer. I'm starting to raise the mower up. So I mowed it short the first time. I raised it up one full setting, partially because it was overgrown for that setting. It was like choking the mower.
too much grass.
It's growing. And I went ahead and put down my first application of fertilizer, man. I'm kicking this winter dormancy's butt. I'm going to get the rest of the yard back. There are a couple of spots that are, more dormant than growing. But that soon will be remedied.
Well, I'm glad that you've enlightened us on your ability to mow.
Well, here's the other thing. Here's the other thing. For the rest of you guys that are growing Bermuda lawns, it's probably still a little early. You may be able to be able to get out there and look at scalping your lawn here pretty soon. The baseball field we were practicing on is a Bermuda grass. I was looking at it. And I was like, oh, there's that green tint that you need to be looking for. It's there. So
it's happening. So I've noticed that in my lawn as well.
If you're starting to see green, go ahead and chop down all the grass you've got, because that grass is not coming back. It's the green stuff coming from the ground. One, the mowing will help stimulate the root system, the plant as a whole, to grow. So it'll kind of kick itself into gear. I think that's why my grass is coming out so quickly now, because I did mow it. But you Bermuda guys, get ready to throw down your first application of some fert. You can go to the good old box store and get you. If you're going to do fert, you can do Milorganite.
Who now?
It's called Milorganite. Milorganite. It's a, what do they call it? It's an organic biosolid. So it's going to smell like straight up crap because it is. It's from a treatment plant in, get this, Milwaukee, Milorganite.
Well, there you go.
But it's sold basically at like Lowe's and Home Depot everywhere. It's like a 36-pound bag, and you put it down like 10-plus pounds per thousand. So most yards will just take just one single bag. The bag, I think, is fairly cheap because it's recycled poo. It's like $13 or $14. You can just put that down once a month. The thing that you have to be prepared for is the smell. But just know the organic material in it and the microbial action in the dirt, your grass is going to love it.
So where I can find this at any box store?
Home Depot, and I think Walmart's had it before too. It's fairly inexpensive. Like I said, it's about $13, $14 a bag. Most homes in our area will just take up one full bag, spread it as evenly as you can. You will see, like when you do this and your grass is full growing, like in the growing season, when you put this down, in like 3 days, 3-4 days, your grass will change color.
Like blue?
It will get a little bit of a blue tint to it.
Oh, come on. Oh, come on.
Because of the iron in it. It's got iron in it, which helps darken the color, and it'll actually push towards like a dark green, maybe even a little steely blue.
Mm.
I mean, it's not going to be like clear water ocean blue.
I prefer Steely Dan's.
Anyways.
I think the apple that I really liked.
Oh, here we go.
Sweet Tango.
Sweet Tango.
It's all one word.
Sweet Tango.
Sweet Tango.
Sweet Tango.
I think that was the one that we were recommended to get and I really like, but I couldn't tell you. There's so many apple varieties. I was over here looking at them.
That's what you're doing, like your eyes not glazing over looking at apples.
No, I am, and this was the one that I think we got that we really liked. And it says, with its outstanding flavor and remarkably loud crunch, Sweet
crunch.
Tango has earned its position as a top pick for apple lovers. You know, actually, I don't think this was it. Dadgummit. It was really juicy. It was one that when you cut it, I mean, juice just was like just coming out of it everywhere.
Hey, there's a mic there.
It's fine. We're an hour and a half in. Nobody's listening.
Nope, not anymore. Especially after I ramble on for like 20 minutes about spreading poo on your grass.
Yeah, just basically taking a butter knife. Getting out on your hands and knees.
It's one of those things where like you don't want to store it in your garage. So
where do you go? Well, on your back porch, I guess?
No. You buy it and you apply it.
You use all of it.
You put it out there and you just know that like when it gets wet, you're gonna smell it, but the heat of the day will kind of help break it down. It'll go away in a few days.
The
but,
heat of the day will help with something.
Definitely really, really good for your yard. And like I said, it's really inexpensive. And it's one of those things where you can't over-apply it. Like, you're not going to burn your lawn like you would if you, or like you could if you over-applied some like synthetic fertilizers,
mm-hmm.
which aren't foolproof. Milorganite is really foolproof. Like, you can't overdo it.
Milorganite. Milorganite sounds like...
The bag has a picture of a house. They actually ran a contest for this last year. They asked for people that use Milorganite to send pictures of their house, and they picked a winner to be on the bag this year. Dude got like a year's supply of stuff.
It's like a dump truck full of crap.
Yeah.
Congratulations, brother. Here's some fertilizer that sounds like it was a rejected Harry Potter villain.
Yeah. So if you're interested, milorganite.com. Like I said, it's MILORGANITE, Milorganite. It's slow release nitrogen fertilizer. It's natural, stinks, really good stuff.
That's how you know it's working.
Yep. Michael, what did you learn this week?
I learned one thing.
Let's hear it.
We, every now and then, to kind of mix things up, we'll get a HelloFresh subscription.
You have to explain what that is. I don't know what that is.
HelloFresh is you log on to their website and you pick out three meals for two.
And here. I'm now one of our favorite radio hosts.
Oh wait. Oh, he's gonna really mic up the keyboard. Let me see. I haven't heard it. Oh, there you go. Oh, that sounds good. He's typing so much in there.
You really have to bang the keys for that to work.
Yeah, you've got to be purposeful with your typing. But HelloFresh is one of those box meal places where they send you all the ingredients and
it's
the directions.
Service, right?
Yeah, they send you the ingredients and the directions to make three meals. And
I think I broke my mouse.
Really, all you need is some cookware and I think butter and olive oil, salt and pepper. Those are kind of the basic things you just need around. Mm-hmm.
Get $80 off your first four boxes. So this is not a cheap meal planning.
It's not super cheap, which is why we don't do it very often, because my wife has figured out a way to
fake it.
Well, she'll cancel it and then she'll come back later when there's some deal.
Yeah, right now it's $80 off. So right. Your first four boxes are $20. So that's $25 a box.
Right, which regular is cheap. Regular price, it's probably, I think it's 60. Regular price, it's about $60 for three meals. But if you get their deals that they run quite a bit, you can get those same three meals for $25 or something. If you're looking,
usually $9 a serving. Yikes!
Right, it gets kind of high, so that's why we don't do it often, and we try to time it where she's got one of those deals. Well, not try. That's the only time we get it. Anyway, so we had that.
Go on.
We had that, and she usually cooks them. One, she's a much better cook. She's faster and she enjoys it as well. And she wasn't feeling good this last week. And so I said, well, I'll cook one.
I got this, boo.
I got this. And hey, the house didn't burn down. No one had food poisoning. Everything went pretty well. I cooked the figgy balsamic pork, which was really delicious. It's got it was two little small pork tenderloins that you kind of sear in the skillet and then finish in the oven. Then you cover with... Oh, thanks, buddy.
It took me that long to find it. I'm so
sorry. Well, it's worth it. And then you cover it with the sauce you make. And then you had roasted green beans and rosemary potatoes on the side. And it was... all the meals have been pretty good. Some of them have been much better than others. Some of them have just been kind of ho-hum, but... It's fun. If you get the deal, it's quote-unquote worth it. But, I mean, our little girl doesn't eat food, really. So we can still do the two-portion meal, and everybody will still get fed. If, you know, she'll eat one bite off of our plate and then go back to her veggie straws.
Which are really good, by the way.
Man, veggie straws are surprisingly good. They're kind of like Pringles.
Yeah, you open a bag, you just don't stop.
Yeah.
The Zesty Ranch, way to go.
I agree. We didn't like them because they got her hands kind of gross. And she, of course, then would
touch everything,
rub it on our face or something. But the The Zesty Ranch was surprisingly good. I polished off a bag of those myself the other night.
Which you don't feel bad about doing because they're vegetables.
They're vegetables.
And they're baked.
Yeah, they're even green, some of them.
Yeah, green, yellow, and orange.
Yeah, naturally colored, I'm sure.
Sure. They're not like as bad as veggie straws may sound. They're vegetable chips.
Yeah.
Super tasty.
Yeah, they're really great. They're hollow, so that's mm-hmm. kind of fun. They really crunch because you've got four sides.
It's a good chip.
And you just... Pretty good.
That was bad.
The veggie chips they make, too, are good with hummus, if you like hummus, which I do. Big fan.
I like ranch.
Would also work with ranch.
The ranch-flavored chip dipped in ranch.
Yeah.
Or dipped in a ranch dip.
Double up. Double or nothing.
Yep. All right, man. What else we got?
I don't know, man. I think...
Sorry, this wasn't meant to interrupt you. This is just our...
No, this is all we've got. We've just got to... We've got to let this ramp up a little bit and then see how we do against the Wolverines.
All right, everybody. All right, with that, I'm Spencer. That's Michael. Thanks for joining us on the 23 Personnel Podcast as we get ready to take on the Michigan Wolverines in the Sweet 16. Thanks for joining us. California.